You can't start the car. Johnny has the keys.
Rule number one, don't open the door.
Wow, how did they film that? What is going on?
I think that was one of the best scenes I've seen in a lot of movies.
When you're watching them, you're like, what am I watching?
I don't even want to talk about it.
Oh, no, you love me. You know you love me.
This is like art, dude. This is like right in your face, incredible.
I can't stop watching it. What the hell is going on?
What the hell is going on?
I mean, I fell in love with it from the opening credits.
It just kind of blew my mind how brilliant it was.
We just know. We can tell. We've watched so many VHS movies.
Yeah, we are sad, sad people.
Hello, hello, and welcome out there in podcast and YouTube land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, a podcast where two guys get together. We talk about science fiction and horror movies, key influences on those movies, and then things that they in turn influenced. We've been doing it for quite a few years now, and we're glad you found us, or stumbled upon us, or read about us, or heard about us, or clicked on us.
Hear ye, hear ye.
Yes, and if you are new, this is totally unscripted. We don't even know what we're going to talk about. No, we know what we're going to talk about, but we haven't conferred on it. And we're glad you found us. Please, if you would not mind, take just the few seconds it takes to click down below, give us a review, give us some stars, subscribe, ring the bell, do all those things that everyone always asks you to do, because it really is important and it does help. And if you are returning to us, thanks. Welcome back. Glad to have you here. And if you haven't done those things, do them or do them again. We like repeats. My name is David. I'm here with my good friend Tim. Tim, you're swimming in the ocean today, but it's good to have you with us. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I'm doing good.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, we usually start this big show off with a little bit of a what we have done in our genre week. And I did something a little unusual that I'm going to lay on you guys right now. I watched a movie called Lured from 1947.
Wow.
I went back and forth about whether or not I should talk about this movie because it's not really a horror movie at all. It's more of a mystery thriller. But since we're kind of going into that territory sometimes now, I decided I would. And I enjoyed this so much that I just had to talk about it.
I have never even heard of this movie.
I had not either, but okay. I discovered it on Turner Classic Movies, and I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes, and it got 100%. I was like, wow, I need to check this out.
That was two reviews.
Huh?
Two reviews, and both of them from the right.
You know what? I forgot to put down how many reviews it was, but it did get 100%.
Okay.
That was my first surprise. My second surprise was that it is directed by one of my favorite directors. It was directed by Douglas Sirk. He is the German director that didn't really become well known until the 1950s with melodramas like Magnificent Obsession, All That Heaven Allows, Written on the Wind, Imitation of Life. Remember that one?
Yep.
Here he is directing a thriller in the 1940s. So I was like, okay.
Wow.
It's actually a remake of a French film called Personal Column. They wanted to change the name because they thought lured sounded too much like lurid. But Douglas Sirk said, no, the movie's called Lured. So he had a little bit of pull. Another thing that surprised me about this movie was the cast. This movie stars Lucille Ball.
Wow.
Yeah. It also has George Sanders, who we have talked about a lot lately, and he is becoming one of our favorite actors.
Yeah. He's a good actor.
He is. He's very good. He's the one that committed suicide and said that he was bored with life or whatever.
And I just read a thing where I think it was Tyrone Powers died on the set of a movie. They were rehearsing a sword fight or filming a sword fight together. And he died on set of a heart attack, but it's with George Sanders.
Oh, wow.
That's who was doing the sword fight with.
How
That's why
crazy.
That name came up.
Yeah, George Sanders has been creeping up in our talks a lot lately. It makes me think we need to do Village of the Damned next year.
Maybe, yeah.
This also stars Charles Coburn and George Zucko, who you would recognize as actors from that time period. They're kind of like character actors. A synopsis is, a serial killer in London is murdering young women he meets through personal columns of a newspaper. He announces each of his murders to the police by sending them a cryptic poem. After a dancer disappears, the police enlist an American friend of hers, Sandra Carpenter, to answer these advertisements in the personal columns and lure the killer.
Wow. So,
yeah, cool. It's a great – I mean, you
think – I love the premise.
Yeah, 1947, but you can picture it. Boris Karloff is used so skillfully in this movie. He only has, like, one scene. But he is the biggest red herring because, you know, the minute you see Boris Karloff in this movie, oh, he's the killer. You know, you know he's the killer. Well, he's not. Surprise. So they used him.
Spoiler.
Yeah. I'm not going to say any more because I don't want to spoil it, even though it's almost 100 years old.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I highly recommend it. And Lucille Ball is not her crazy, kooky self that she was 3 or 4 years later on the I Love Lucy show. This is her playing, you know, a dancer that goes undercover. So,
well, when you see her play straight, she's great.
Yeah.
She's a really good actress. So I agree with that. That's cool. That's neat.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's not a horror movie, but it is kind of a suspense thriller. So.
I'm going to go back because we also had, you know, recently did a top five, and one of the ones I watched in it, I'm going to mention on our regular show this
I
one,
did a few of those too.
Which is Europa Report.
Awesome.
I really was impressed with this movie, and it's definitely going on our list. I think we should do it. It's a found footage movie, but unlike found footage movies of the past, it's not handheld, shaky cam, that sort of thing. It's basically all the cameras that are located on the ship. So they're all static, hard cuts. Nothing is wobbling or moving. It's all this camera, and then we cut to the other camera on the other side of the room, or the exterior camera showing the spaceship or whatever. But basically, it's about man's first interplanetary trip, and it's to a moon of Jupiter called Europa, which, you know, features prominently in 2001 and 2010 and several other science fiction films in history, just because all of our telescopes seem to show that it has ice on it. And if it has ice on it, it means it has water, and possibly water down near the surface. So maybe it's just frozen over, and underneath it has all these oceans that we want to explore. And that's basically the precept of the movie. However, the movie starts 18 months into the mission. The mission is going to take 2 years to get to Europa. And then, of course, whatever excursion they do, and then at least 2 years to come back for these six astronauts. But it starts 18 months into the mission, and they lose contact with mission control. So the rest of the movie is, once they finally continue the mission and land on Europa, they're able to reestablish communication and send all of their reports back. So this movie is like watching a retrospective of NASA putting together, or not NASA, but the Europa Commission putting together the facts of what happened on the mission. And it's got some scary stuff to it. It's got some unique stuff to it. It's very well acted. There's only really one actor you might recognize from it. And I looked him up. His name is Michael Nyqvist, Nyqvist.
Is he like Swedish or something?
He's Scandinavian, yeah. Yes. He was, if you saw John Wick, he's the big mafioso father in John Wick. And he's basically known for, he did the Swedish versions of The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest and The Girl Who, with the butterfly tattoo.
Okay, I do know that name. Is he a director or is he an actor?
No, he's the actor. Okay. He plays the lead actor in all three of the movies.
All right, I may be thinking of the author then of those books who has a similar name.
He's,
yeah.
And he's very good. He's really strong in it. But all the cast is very naturalistic, very good. You don't think anything. I mean, they don't seem like they're acting. They could easily be astronauts.
But David, so
it works really well.
Are there monsters?
I cannot reveal that. You have to watch it to see. It is classified as a sci-fi horror.
I was going to say, I've often seen that movie listed in horror movies, mm-hmm. but I have never come to watch it. So,
came out in 2013. I think either the same year or a couple of years later, there was another one called Apollo 18, which was supposedly the same kind of strategy, but it was a failed mission that was so failed that the public never knew about it, but it's all found footage too. But it's all spaceship, it's all the cams from inside and everything else. So I think this one you'll like. It's a really good found footage. I highly recommend it. It's called The Europa Report, and you can find it on most streaming platforms.
Yeah, we'll have to add that to next year's season, maybe. Okay.
Yeah, so it is scary, but kind of not. It's a hybrid kind of movie. It's part this, part that, part whatever.
Wow. I don't know how to segue from these two movies, except that mine was unusual and yours was kind of suspenseful. So this is an unusual suspenseful movie.
And it's part everything. It's got a little bit of a bunch of different genres all thrown in.
Yeah, and a lot of old school stuff kind of resonating within it as well. It's a little movie that came out in 2020, was it? Yeah, 2020. Yep. And it is called The Block Island Sound. I would have to say that's not a great title, but I can't really think of what else I would call this movie. It sounds like the word sound, like something you would hear, when actually sound is a body of water.
Yes.
Yeah, in between Block Island and Rhode Island. So in between the mainland United States and Block Island is a little strip of water. This is all true, folks out there, called the Block Island Sound.
Maybe they should have just called it Block Island.
That would be like Shutter Island.
But it might have been more interesting. I mean,
it sounds more effective as a title. Yeah, Block Island. But and a lot of the action does take place on Block Island. A lot of it takes place on the Sound as well. A brief synopsis: we have a father and son that live on this tiny island off the United States called Block Island. The father's name is Tom. The son's name is Harry. Tom starts waking up disoriented on his boat. And he doesn't really – it's quite obvious that he doesn't know how he got there or what happened. He comes back. We start realizing that there's a bunch of strange phenomena beginning to happen that is connected to what happened to him out on the boat. Things like lots of dead fish being on the beach, birds falling out of the sky. Tom becomes a bit of a zombie, wouldn't you say?
He starts
spacing out and like waking up, staring into the refrigerator. I mean, obviously we all do that, but you know, he's probably been standing there for an hour, and Harry starts noticing all this stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Harry's sister, who works for a magazine or a newspaper, is sent to investigate the events that are happening on Block Island with the dead fish and stuff. And her coworker, this guy that's like her, it's not really a coworker. He works underneath her. She's his boss.
Yeah.
Go out to investigate. And she starts noticing that the father is acting weird too. Eventually, the father disappears and dies. He disappears for a while, then his body ends up on the beach. So it's like, what happened? And all of a sudden, Harry starts acting like the father was acting. kind of disoriented and zombie-ish.
But only after he goes out searching for where his father was in the area in the Sound.
Right.
Once he comes back, he starts having the same symptoms.
Yeah. There's a lot going on in this movie. And all of a sudden, I'm getting choked. Sorry about that.
Does this movie upset you, make you sad?
Well, I think it's really creepy, especially the weird growling that you hear when they're out on that boat. And a lot of the time they indicate that it's coming through the radio or some kind of electronic device, because he hears it in other places as well. And I don't want to neglect to mention there's the two friends, I guess you would say, that Harry drinks with at the bar, and one of them's like a conspiracy theorist that's like planting all these ideas into his head. But eventually, the sister and her daughter are staying with Harry because of the funeral, and I'm losing track. They end up. She gets worried about Harry. So she goes to a doctor who says she needs to talk to this former patient of hers because it sounds like a very similar diagnosis that has something to do with electromagnetic hypersensitivity. And this one guy.
Very well said.
What's that?
Very well said.
Yeah. And he lives out in a trailer with no electronic devices. So she can't call him or email him or anything. She has to basically just either mail him a letter or drive out there. And it's getting too late because Harry's acting too weird. And she drives out there, leaving her daughter in the care of her coworker friend and Harry. Well, Harry ends up kidnapping the daughter because this thing that's growling out there has already been basically demanding sacrifices, I guess you would say. It sends Harry messages through the image of his dead father saying, you know, that dog that's barking out there, bring it to me. Basically, all he says is dog. And he goes out. Well, this time the father says girl. And it's the little girl that is his niece. And he takes her out. He knocks out the coworker and takes her out to basically be sacrificed. And when he takes these sacrifices out on the boat, basically everything ascends into the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy stuff is happening in this movie. That's why I'm having a hard time synopsizing it. It turns out the girl locks herself in the cabin. The sister does actually get on the boat in time to go out on the water with them. She barricades themselves into the cabin. Tom is trying to open the cabins to let them out and be sacrificed to whatever this thing is out in the water or in the sky. And it turns out the door does come open and the sister, Audrey, ends up getting sucked up into the sky with Tom. But the little girl ends up safe on the boat. And, I mean, I basically could leave it at that. Except,
well, no, because the epilogue is the best part.
The epilogue is great. Basically, you think that Tom and Audrey are dead and the little girl is rescued by the police. But at the very end, they hit on a speech that Audrey had told her daughter earlier in the movie about how they do take fish out of the sea to study and learn and help them, but they do return them sometimes. And all of a sudden, when you think the movie is over with a real downer ending, Audrey comes falling out of the sky and landing into the ocean. And that's the end. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've rambled on and on, but it's really hard to encapsulate this film. What did you think of it?
This was I'd never even heard of this movie when you put it on the list. And actually had, I think even, you know, last week I had to ask, is this really the movie? Is this the movie? Block Island? What is it? What? I don't even know. Anyway, so I'd never seen it before. I liked it, but it's very disjointed in my opinion. And it's very hard to describe. And to tell, because the moods...
Clearly.
the moods shift so much in it, it's hard to say. Because basically, I mean, in a nutshell, if you look at it, it's a science fiction movie. Because they're aliens at the end, and the aliens are abducting people, and that's what they're doing. And you don't find out until the very, very end.
But they show that thing in the water at one point.
It's just, all it is black goo. It could have been an octopus.
It looks like a big, like, blur. Yeah.
Yeah, he's scuba diving. He turns around, and black ink fills the screen.
Right, but before the black ink, he looks a long ways out, and you see this shape.
Right, which could have been whatever. I mean,
the ink could have been a squid.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, my probably because of my proclivities towards science fiction, I definitely took it as, you know, this is like a really nasty cocoon kind of thing, you know, where they suck you up at the end,
okay,
kind of thing.
I can see that. That's a good key.
But I loved the beginning of this. I think the father's casting is really good because you know from the very first shot something is weird about this guy. He just looks weird to begin
He's scary with. Looking.
The way he plays it is this kind of person who's obviously a haunted individual. Something is disturbing him, and you know that from the beginning. And part of it, you know, the townspeople throw off as alcoholism and everything that he has
just
to deal with.
Just old-time fisherman.
He just lost his wife. Mm-hmm. They lost their mother, mm-hmm, evidently. But so the whole first act is really intriguing. The good character set up with all of them, even the daughter who comes off as kind of precocious but nice and all of that. That's really neat. The coworker obviously kind of has a crush on her.
Right.
We can tell that. So that maybe we're going to see something in that later on. Everything else. And then the very ending, with going back to her speech to the daughter about how sometimes we have to study them because it's good for the whole species if we just take a few out of the water and study them, kind of thing, it suddenly makes sense. And you go, oh, that's the movie. That's great. I love that whole ending. Mm-hmm. But that middle section, whew, boy, it's a slog. It really
is. See, it doesn't bother me at all. I think it's I love the atmosphere. I love the suspense. I think you mentioned the casting of the father, but I think the entire cast is fantastic.
I agree. She is amazing, and I'd never heard of or seen her before.
She's a very prolific television actress.
Okay.
She's been on like CSI and SUV and all those things. So
okay.
Or SVU, excuse me, not SUV. But she is also... Well, we'll get into this in casting, but she's the sister of the brothers that directed it. They're all from Rhode Island. That's why, mm-hmm, this movie feels like a really good, it's got a real good sense of place. And I think it's because the people that made it are from there. And you really feel immersed in that island culture of fishermen off of the coast of New England, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I got... I guess my big issue with it is I loved all the stuff with the dad, the daughter, all of that. I don't like Harry. I don't like him as a character.
He's a punk.
And he's, yes, and I don't like his reactions to people and to his family and everything else. And he falls into that weird category of, in my opinion, really bad writing where I have something wrong with me. I know something's wrong with me, but I'm not going to tell anybody. Even when I'm asked by my family, my psychiatrist, my whatever, I'm not going to say something's wrong with me. I just don't know what the hell it is and pisses me off and I want to figure it out.
See, I think that makes it realistic.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah.
No, it does not make it realistic.
It does. And there are times when he tries to be nice, like when he tries to be nice to the other sister that comes for the funeral and agrees to take her to the ferry and they're having lunch. And you can tell he's trying to be nice there.
Not
they're
when
having
in the
breakfast
car, at the dinner table. He is,
or is it yes. dinner? I guess it's dinner then.
Yeah, because it's late at night. She's got to catch the last ferry.
Right. And that's right. It is.
He actually
night.
Says mm-hmm. he's being nice to her and thanks her for coming, mm-hmm. and says I'll be happy to take her. It's no problem.
And they have that real blah, blah, poignant blah. Goodbye, where she says,
"No, it's
you
not
need...
poignant."
She looks at him and basically tells him, "You need to start taking care of yourself," or whatever. I can't remember her exact words. But I thought it was pretty poignant.
Yeah, instead of responding with, I understand that, as a matter of fact, something has been happening to me, Bob, but let me tell you, or whatever, he says, yeah, I'll see you at the next funeral. That's his line to her. That's his goodbye to her. And I'm like, dick.
That's the character, though. That is what I mean, people are like that. We just don't know them, or you don't.
I understand being an anti-hero or a dick or whatever. I can totally understand that. But this, to me, falls into that category of every situation where we could propel the plot in a different direction and maybe make it more interesting, we don't. We just, again, watch Harry suffer and not tell anybody anything over and over and over again. Even down to having nightmare fantasies where he's vomiting up worms that are crawling in his sink. That you don't want to tell the psychiatrist that? No, I guess you don't. Okay, fine. Sure. Don't want to tell your sister that? You still want to be here left alone with your niece and this dude, even though you know you're having blackouts for hours at a time and ending up in the middle of the ocean? Just like your dad, who died, by the way, recently. And we don't want to mention that to anybody. Okay, sure.
I think it's because he's just like his dad. I think his dad was the same way.
Well, his dad was the same way at the beginning. You could tell because people would say, I mean, he's standing there holding a pitcher that's filling with water for an hour. And when he finally comes back to, she goes, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty traditional. I can understand that. But even if they had even said, oh, because you are taken over by the monster or the alien or the whatever, the entity, whatever, you really don't have free will and you really right. don't want to be caught.
Well, I mean, and I did interpret it that way, especially, you know, once he has his own experience with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I got every time he's. It's a possibility of us exploring something. He's a dick.
I was mesmerized by the movie from the get-go. I think his performance is just as good. That's why I like him. So, I mean, as far as I can justify the behaviorisms just because I'm into his performance. You asked where this movie came from because you had never heard of it.
Ever.
You probably do not remember, but I talked about this as a genre topic on our Carrie episode back in season 4.
Okay.
So this was one of those. And this is a good little lesson for you folks out there. A lot of times mm-hmm. when we do modern movies we have never seen, it's because we're investigating them via our genre topics. And that's why we talk about stuff
yeah.
at the beginning of our episode. Well, I discovered this movie, you know, 2 seasons back. And I was like blown away by it. I like watched it late at night and I was like, this is so ominous. This is so freaking scary. Why am I scared? You never see a monster and I'm terrified. You know, I'm fearful for that girl. You know, I was fearful for the dog when he pointed at the dog and said, dog. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I really, really liked this movie. Are there scenes? I mean, there's a lot of scenes to me that stick out. I mean, obviously the ending was one for you.
The ending, the very opening, I mean, it starts out with just an intense close-up of his eyes and his face lying on the boat mm-hmm. and waking up with all the decay, you know, everything thrown the around father. Him and everything. Yeah. The father. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a strong scene. I liked I loved the family dynamics mm-hmm. in this. It just, to me, I think to a lot of modern audiences, it would seem very slow. That whole middle section would seem very slow. I mean, we talk about slow burn horror. This is not, it's not even a burn. It's barely a blister. It's barely,
I think it's just regular slow burn. I don't see any difference there. But a lot of people do not like this movie, and they're the people that I preach to when we talk about liking movies that are not as good because they're gory or fast-paced or whatever, improbable.
This is a mood piece, which I thought was really good. I liked scenes. Let's see, scenes. I liked the scene with I think the psychiatrist said it was her brother or somebody that had the disease that he was electromagnetically hypersensitive or something.
Was it her? Was she related to him? I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure she did say it was, because when we remember when the sister first gets there, his first question is, "How is so and so?" And he goes, "Oh, Dr. Such and Such, she's fine." Da da da. Because he hasn't even talked to his own sister.
Oh, yeah. I got the fact that he knew her. I didn't realize they were related, but okay.
Yeah, I think I remember that was her. You know, they were related. That performance was great and interesting because we see it just from her point of view. And it's that whole conspiracy theory weirdo living in his van down by the river kind of thing. And he won't even let you bring your cell phone into the trailer, which means you have no way of talking to anybody or calling for help or anything.
And he's clearly unbalanced in some ways.
Clearly, he starts losing it. But we as an audience member, because we know what she doesn't know, because we know the stuff about Harry and Tom, so we know he's actually right, and he's telling her the truth, but if you're a rational person, how do you react to this guy who's acting irrationally?
Yeah.
So we're going, no, listen to him. He's really right. He's really right. So I liked that, but that comes so late. I mean, we have to go through the whole funeral thing and the whole thing with the food and all of the psychiatrist stuff and then the dog and then just more fish coming up on shore and birds falling.
Well, the thing with the food is interesting too, though, because he just loses it in the grocery store and starts grabbing everything and just piling it into this cart. And, I mean, it's just overloaded, and then he doesn't even pay for it. He just rolls it out, and they come chasing after him because he's in one of those weird phases like his dad was in, you know, where he doesn't know what's happening.
Yeah, and the hypersensitive, I don't want to say the crazy guy, but the hypersensitive guy near the end says it starts with them just wanting food, and then they want something bigger, and then they want more complex animals, like, you know, dogs, blah, blah, blah. And then pretty soon, before I knew it, there was a homeless woman in my car, and I was driving out there.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I left out the deer, too. He hits a deer at one point, and next thing you know, he's out on that boat with that deer, feeding it to whatever's out there.
Deer.
Yeah. And his dad appears, you know. Those are my scenes. Anytime his dad appears, it scares the fuck out of me because he is creepy looking.
And he's creepy looking. And yeah,
he's the manifestation of the alien or monster or whatever it is. You say alien, I say monster. Because this movie to me is total Lovecraft. I mean, it's like Lovecraft without saying Lovecraft.
Could be, yeah. It does have cosmic horror feel to it.
Yeah.
Very much. And that's one of my keys was Lovecraft. Just if it is a monster. If it is one of the old ones, you know, sort of thing, summoning.
And that's what it feels like to me. But then again, I lean that direction in most things. A little background.
Right, whereas I immediately took it as there's a spaceship up there. That's sucking up things. Yes. So. It's the way we see the perspectives, different perspectives.
I mentioned that Block Island Sound is real. It's a strait in the Atlantic Ocean, approximately 10 miles wide, separating Block Island from the coast of mainland Rhode Island. This film premiered at the Fantasia International Film Festival August 28th of 2020. It was released on Netflix in March of 21. You had asked me originally if this was a Shudder movie on our last show, and it wasn't. This was a Netflix thing. The film met critical acclaim and has a 90% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. However, I have, like you said, read tons of negative reviews where people say it's too slow. And I disagree because I just got sucked into it and I was mesmerized. I was ready to go feed my dog to the alien.
I think it sucks you in very well, but then I do think that whole second act is extremely slow until it finally builds to the end.
But it's not that long, really. It's only like an hour and 39 minutes, I think.
Yeah, but I literally looked at my watch. It was like 45 minutes in, and I went, oh, my God, I still have 45 minutes of this freaking movie? So it failed my watch test sort of thing.
Oh.
Because again, you know, we've talked about it on the podcast. There have been 3-hour movies that I never look at my watch once. Right. They're amazing. They're incredible. And this one didn't do that. And basically, I think maybe I just needed something else. Maybe if we'd done a parallel story and maybe told a couple of scenes with Crazy Guy or Electromagnetic Man kind of thing, so that it's not just Harry repeating the same shit. I'm having a weird thing happen to me, and I'm not going to tell anybody about it. And then tomorrow, I'm going to have another weird thing happen to me, and I'm not going to tell anybody about that either.
Well, that brings me to we were talking scenes, and it brings me to the scene where you see Harry in his normal life with who I think are friends of his. He's sitting at a booth with one guy that's somewhat normal and one guy that's a conspiracy freak that's like spouting all this crazy stuff. And he always ends up giving this guy a ride home, even though he doesn't want to. It's clear he doesn't want to. But there's another scene where he's sitting in the very same bar, in the very same booth, and the other friend that is normal is like two booths away. It's like, mm-hmm. Why aren't they sitting together?
Harry's a dick and nobody wants to sit near him.
I think that's the truth. I think the other guy was there and Harry came in and purposefully didn't sit with him because he wanted to be by himself. And I think
dad had just died.
Yeah, and it makes more sense with his character because, like you said, he's a dick. And he still ends up giving that crazy conspiracy guy a ride. And then he also ends up finding him on the beach at one point, living in a tent because he's trying to figure out what's going on with the fish, you know, and he's just.
But he also has a storage unit full of conspiracy crap.
Right.
You know, and one thing, and it was interesting, and that kind of start to me, that's like the start of Act 3 in it.
Okay.
Is when is the deer going into that scene where he finds him and he starts saying all this stuff has happened, you know, and all these, you know, birds flying out of the air happens all over the world. It's not just here, man. It's happening.
And
everywhere.
He's got articles where it's in different countries. Yeah.
Correct. And that was interesting. And then later on, when we know, we can tell it's escalating and Harry is going to have to bring somebody else out. Kind of thing. I thought, and he started driving because he's kind of trying to get away from it. He doesn't want to. It's right when he almost hits the girl and wrecks himself and then still almost takes her and blah, 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 and all that. I got the distinct feeling that he was going to get that guy. And I thought it would be really interesting.
Oh, that would have been a good twist, actually. Yeah.
If he took the conspiracy guy and maybe move that earlier in the movie. So now we get that. And he's already sent somebody up there and they never came back. Or they wash ashore a couple of days later. Da, da, da. And that's why in the last act, he's suddenly with the with the niece. That would be freaky.
Yeah.
You know, because I really thought, oh, why are we looking at this guy on the beach? And why is he showing him all this
shit? Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Blah, blah, blah. I had a question. I was going to say, why do you think they introduce that character? But I think I may have answered my own question. I think it's to juxtapose the craziness of the guy living out there without electricity. It's like, who's more crazy? I think the guy out there without electricity knows what's going on, whereas the other guy has no idea.
Agreed. It's the possible theories that we could entertain.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it, you know, because he's throwing out all these crazy conspiracies, not just about what's happening on the island, about other stuff too. He chariots of the gods, man.
Yeah.
They practically own South America. It's that kind of
thing. Let me take you out of my boat. Maybe we can see what's happening with the fish out there.
Or he, you know, Harry could just come in and go, come, you know, I found something.
Well, I was going to say, that's the one problem is that when he goes into those like comatose states or those, you know, zombie-like states, I don't know that he would be able to communicate something convincingly enough to lure that guy out there. So that's probably why they didn't do that. It would have been too hard for him, you know, because he's already scared. Why would he go out there, you know, if somebody's...
He's always given the guy rides.
That's true.
If he gave him a ride and they rode to the dock.
But he wasn't zombified then. He was just drunk.
No.
Or normal.
I'm just saying he would... That's what I thought was going to happen, and it didn't, so I found that interesting. And then I also just... Again, I just think that whole middle section has the dread feel that it needs. It just needed something else to keep me interested or piqued besides the family drama. I mean, it basically devolves into a family drama for a good 35 minutes.
It does, but I'm intrigued by that. That doesn't bother me. It's like Hereditary. It's a lot like Hereditary, actually.
Well, yeah, the two biggest keys I have are Hereditary, and then the other one that I have that you didn't like is Dark and the Wicked. I think it has a big feeling of Dark and the Wicked.
I could see that.
We don't know what's
and
happening.
And I like that movie. I just didn't find it that scary.
Yeah. See, I found it very just...
It's a mood piece, though. I'll give you that. It's very much definitely like this. So, I mean, you know what? Now I'm glad that we're talking about this because I think why I like this movie so much is it is a lot like Hereditary, and I love that movie. So, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
First, I mean, I'll go into cast if it's about that time.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I did want to mention that it's directed by two brothers known as the McManus brothers. Kevin and Matthew, I had never heard of them before, very much like the actors in this movie. Mm-hmm. However, they're predominantly producing and writing other shows, mostly television. They are responsible for Cobra Kai, I mean, or at least they're a part of that team that brought Cobra Kai to Netflix. So they probably deal with Netflix, I would think.
That's the Wax On, Wax Off. That's the...
It's the sequel to Karate Kid, isn't it?
Yeah, a television series sequel to Karate Kid.
Right. It's a series that's on Netflix that's really, really popular with, I guess, young folks. I don't watch it. But anyway, these two guys wrote this movie, too. And as I said, they're obviously from Rhode Island. And I don't know. I would watch something else they do together again. This is the only thing they've done outside of the stuff they do for Netflix as a producing writing team. But I thought
they had one
strong
former movie. Because I think in one of the reviews I read, somebody mentioned if you haven't watched their previous film, it's really good too.
It's probably not a horror movie. That's probably why I don't know. They
maybe not. Yeah.
I've got that they've directed five things. One's called Cameras, one's called Players, Cobra Kai, American Vandals, 14 Cameras. I don't know. Anyway, I had not heard of it.
What was the first one?
The first one was called 15 Cameras.
No.
They produced that. Actually, where did the directing? Funeral Kings is another movie they directed. And it does get high ratings. So. So I've just never heard of it. Anyway, so they're the directors of this movie. It stars Chris Sheffield, who plays the dick you don't like, named Harry. He was in the YA movie, The Maze Runner. I've not watched those movies. You've talked about
Maze Runners? Yeah.
Yeah. And he was on the show, The Last Ship, which I believe is one of those USA Channel shows.
It was pretty good. It's a post-apocalyptic, with a Navy vessel that's finds itself alone in the world.
It's like Philadelphia Experiment.
Oh, yeah.
The only reason I know what that show is because another podcast I listen to, that guy watches it, but I don't really know anything about it. I think he's strong. I mean, I think he's really good in this. So, and he carry most of the film. He has some additional help from Audrey, who is played by Michaela McManus. As I mentioned, Michaela is the sister of these two producer-writer-directing brothers. So they're all from Rhode Island. She's been in a ton of stuff. If you look at her resume, it's not stuff I watch, but it's just very popular stuff like CSI and SVU. She was on The Orville.
Yeah, she's really good.
Did you watch The Orville, right? She's apparently on it. She was in Aquarius, that show with David Duchovny, I think, that was on like Showtime or something. So I really liked her. The guy that you like that plays the father, Tom, was played by Neville Archibald. Archambault. I can't really pronounce that. He's from New Zealand, I believe. And he's been in some movies I've never heard of, Violet and Daisy, Solomon Grundy. Very distinct and intense look. Like I said, he scares me even when he's not trying to be scary, he scares me. He's just got a really creepy look to him. He looks like he's a bodybuilder too. He's kind of big in that, in the picture on IMDb. Ryan O'Flanagan, another television actor, played Paul, I don't guess you'd call him a love interest. I love that scene where he says something about, because I really do care about you or something. And she just looks at him and says, I don't have time for this right now.
Yeah, I can't do this right now. Yeah.
I love writing like that, where you could say so much with one sentence, you know?
Yeah. And the way, but her, even micro right before it, her two expressions were like, A, I'm flattered. Wow, that's kind of cool. I should consider this.
Don't have time for it. Yeah. So that's a really good scene. Jim Cummings plays Dale, the crazy conspiracy guy. I don't really know much about him, but he's awesome. I think he's very convincing. Really strong. Mm-hmm. And then this one I have to mention, Kurt, who is the guy that lives out in the trailer with no electricity because of electromagnetic hypersensitivity, is played by a guy named Jeremy Holm. And when I watched this a second time, I was like, I know that guy. I talked about a movie in season 5. It was a genre topic for In the Mouth of Madness called The Ranger. And I told you it's about a psychopathic park ranger. Well, he played him.
Okay.
This guy, Jeremy Holm, played him. So I was like, I knew him. But I had seen Block Island before I saw The Ranger. And, of course, as things circle around. I think he's awesome. That was not a good movie. The Ranger was not a good movie, but he is a good actor. And he is another solid television actor that's in a lot of stuff. Kind of reminds me a bit of the guy from Firefly. I can't think of his name. But you know who I'm talking about, that actor that's a television actor. Serenity.
Yeah, what about it?
What is his name?
Who?
The lead. In
Fillion?
Yes, Nathan Fillion. He reminds me of Nathan Fillion a little bit.
Could see that, yep.
And then basically that's all I have. Heidi Niedermeyer played Jen, the other sister. Willie Carpenter played Chief Rogers. I've seen him in stuff before, too. I thought he was really good. Especially that scene where he puts Harry in jail for being...
Well, and I like the scene where with both of them when they're saying they're calling off the search and everything else.
Yeah.
And he's really compassionate there, but also strong. Mm-hmm. And it was really good for all three of them.
Yeah, we know your dad drinks a lot and he's out here in the middle of the night on a boat.
We're doing the best we can.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, his body's not going to just miraculously turn up. You know,
yeah, you got to kind of face the truth,
right?
Kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
You had mentioned McManus. Michaela was it Michaela?
That's her name.
Was in the Orville, so I had to look it up while you were talking. And she plays Talaya, and I went, "Oh, okay, no wonder I didn't recognize her." This is. Can you see her? Wait, hold on. This is her.
Wow, that's a lot of makeup. Okay.
So, yeah, no, I didn't recognize her at all.
Okay.
Horrible.
But did you like that character?
Oh, she was great.
Okay.
She's an evil villain in it. She's really good.
I know that people out there think, oh, you like everybody. But, I mean, I have to give her props. She's so natural and so just, I mean, I just bought it. She's just really, really good. And I have a feeling she'd be that way in anything she's in.
Well, yeah, in review after review, I looked at this, whether it was a good or a bad review, they mentioned her, they mentioned the father, because he was in 13 elevators or 12 elevators or whatever he was in that he had done before that they said he was really good
cameras?
In. But
13 very, cameras?
13 cameras, yeah.
Elevators.
But they didn't mention Sheffield. Very rarely did they mention Sheffield at the beginning, you know, and I was going, interesting. You know, and it shows how good she is, how strong she is.
And this is going to sound like me being, I don't know, prejudiced, but she and the McManus brothers come from Netflix and network television, whereas Chris Sheffield was in The Last Ship, which is a USA. And I always kind of think USA and CW and those kind of actors are of a different caliber.
Oh, yeah, usually.
Yeah, because they're less expensive. And I mean, he was in The Maze Runner, which was a big movie, but I don't have any other big movies he was in. So anyway, not to be judgmental, but I mean, I just kind of categorize types of actors. So sorry. Sorry, folks.
I agree. No, that's good.
That's all I have for cast. And then I didn't have anything for awards because this was a really small movie. And unless it was on the indie circuit, which I could have sworn it was nominated. No, that's the director. Sorry, this makes great TV. Yeah, there is no awards. I mean, usually there's a little yellow banner on IMDb for any awards, even small awards like festival awards, but this didn't apparently get submitted for anything or. So I don't have anything for that. And it's not on the 1001 movies you must see before you die. And I can understand but it would definitely be on one of my horror movie lists that I keep personally because I did like this movie a lot.
Yeah.
Before we move on to keys, do you have any trivia?
I do not. Not for this. I did find it interesting that there were no tricks in this that I could see. And I was really thrown off by the effects of the Ascension and everything else because they looked extraordinarily realistic. Yeah. And I was going, how the hell did they do this? Because everything is going up. I mean, the life jackets and everything is just, the fishing rods move from like this angle to being pulled literally physically up and vibrating and stuff. I was going, these effects look really, really good. Nothing looks CGI. Nothing looks screened in it. It looked really good.
I thought so, too. It is very sci-fi effect, like something's being sucked up in a tractor beam. But it still feels more like a monster to me.
Well, and I think that's reinforced by my next special effects that I liked is the floating. I mean, they show this huge vortex cloud kind of gray. It looks like the center of a hurricane kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It looks like Dorothy, Auntie M, you know, whatever. And things are floating up and people even. And it looks very good. It's very well done. It's very well shot. I like that. And they didn't use really any other tricks in the whole movie. No real camera tricks. No real strange lensing.
No CGI. Done.
No.
Which is
everything
wonderful.
Is done very practically and very, I guess, realistically is the best way to say it. The lighting is realistic. When it's day, night, lamp light, bedroom light, whatever, it's very realistic. It's very well shot.
Yeah, I found myself
analyzing. I really do think they have great cinematography.
Yeah, like when they all go up so high, you know, into the sky, I was like, you know, when they fall, they better hope they land in the water because if they hit that boat, it's going to kill them. Mm-hmm. Because they would be falling too far and hitting something hard. But that's how Tom wakes up in the beginning of the movie. So do you think he landed on the boat?
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's how the son wakes up the first time. He's on the front of the boat.
Unless they landed in the water and crawled in and passed out, I guess.
No. They landed on the boat.
Then that's why they act like zombies. They probably got their brains jarred somehow.
Maybe concussion or something. Right. Yeah, it could have been.
And there's a scene, I actually have that scene where he's looking in the mirror right behind me. He looked really haggard that day, and that's the day after the first time.
Yeah. Well, that's because they've anally probed him sort of thing, because that's what aliens do.
Nah, it's a giant tentacled monster.
Yes. You're seeing Cthulhu.
I am.
And I'm seeing
that thing, you know, that was in the mist walking. Only out in the ocean. Yeah. I had one little bit of trivia. I sent this to you, so you're familiar with it. Jay Hurtado of Screen Anarchy gave the film a positive review and wrote, "If you're expecting a monster movie, you might be disappointed at the lack of blood and guts. But if you open your mind, the Block Island sound just might scare the hell out of you." And I agree.
Yeah.
Because this movie scares me. And like I said, I don't know why. You don't see monsters. It's the dread. Mm-mm. Of what's out there and not seeing it that makes this movie so effective.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So, with that, I guess we can move on to keys.
Okay.
You've already mentioned Hereditary and The Dark and the Wicked. So, we know that they're both mood pieces that are dark and dreary, and this one is too. So,
and have an obsession with a single focus member of a family, and the family's already dysfunctional to begin with. And how this whatever circumstances happen in the movie just further splinter the families. That's both in there. I've got Midnight Mass. It had mostly because it is that island feel, mm-hmm. and they talk about, you know, all the tourists are gone, so now there's only 1,000 people left on the island, and she goes, oh, that's kind of rounding up, isn't it? Kind of thing. So it had that isolationist, gray, overcast feel to it that Midnight Mass had. So I had that one. Another one you'll probably like that I have on mine is 30 Days of Night.
Really?
That same
because
kind of
feel. Because they're isolated?
Yeah. It's that same kind of small community, isolated, all together. How do we survive, you know, the what's coming? Even though it's just really
Harry.
Surviving what's coming. Harry. Mm-hmm. Surviving what's coming. It's all of them.
Yeah. I like that they have normal names like Harry and Audrey and Tom. You get so many strange names these days, but I think the trend is people going back to more traditional names. The characters That's are good. Harry, Audrey, Tom, Paul, Emily is the little girl, Dale is the crazy guy, and Kurt is the other crazy guy. They're all just I'm big. This could sound stupid, but I'm big on one syllable names. I think one syllable names are just they do it for me. So.
So you're not going to have a heroine named Michaela. I'm just saying.
It's a thing when I'm writing, too, I think, more than anything. I mean, I will use a double syllable like David, but like when you start getting into, you know, 3 and 4 syllable names, I get lost and I'm done.
Plus, Sebastian.
Plus they take longer to type.
You have to do that and edit. Put an AI in a bot in there that says replace this name.
Yeah. I have one that you're gonna like is the whole getting sucked up into the sky as potential food for this alien or monster is Nope, the Jordan Peele movie. Nope. Yep. Basically.
Yep.
I was like, I think I've seen this before, kinda, and that's what it reminded me of. Except you actually see the monster in that one.
Very true. Yeah. Very true. And I had said Cocoon, which is similar to the whole ascension at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You can't do anything in New England without mentioning the master himself. This reminded me of a Stephen King short story.
The Reach is the short story you're talking about.
Okay. It reminded me of that. I don't think I've ever read that.
It's an old one. I think it's in Skeleton Crew. It's about a woman that lives out on an island, and the only way you can access it is by ferry, and it goes across. Instead of a sound, I think they call it the Reach, R-E-A-C-H. Uh-huh.
Yep, that's another term.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, but yeah.
So, it had that kind of feel to it, that insular feel, that kind of lack of an ending. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of ambiguous at the end. So it had a very King feel to me. I didn't get the Lovecraft. I got a little bit of the Lovecraftian, but not as much.
See, that would be my strongest key. This thing, this feels so much like a Lovecraft movie to me, even though it's not billed as one at all.
Yeah.
But it reminds me, if you're going to go deeper into Lovecraft, which is, like I said, one of my keys, I would think Shadow Over Innsmouth the one that is set on the ocean with like the fish people.
Yeah.
But
then the conspiracy friend needs to say, don't you know this has happened in this town before? Blah, blah, blah. Because we actually were built on an ancient... This didn't used to be an island.
No,
it was actually connected
to the mainland. I totally disagree.
Main.
I think the reason why this movie works is because we don't have that. It is left ambiguous. And I think the ambiguity is what turns me on as far as this movie. This movie turns me on. Have you heard me? I say everything's getting kind of sexual.
I guess so.
I was like there talking about one syllable names and I don't know. Anyway.
Sucked up into big clouds and thrown back in the ocean. I don't understand.
Yeah, there's something overtly horrifying and sexual about this movie. And I am totally joking, folks. There is nothing sexual about this movie at all. It pushes the buttons for me as far as slow dread horror, and I just really like it for that. As far as other keys, I mentioned Lovecraft. I have one other that I picked up off of IMDb. Mm-hmm. Someone named Edward Guimont, I don't know who that is, argued that while there are similarities to the work of Lovecraft, a closer parallel is an author named Charles Fort, who had a book from 1919 called The Book of the Damned. And it immediately made me say, ooh, I need to check this book out. Because if it has echoes of Lovecraft, and the guy recognized this film as being very closely associated with it, I'm curious.
I am too.
Yeah. So Charles Fort. Yeah. 1919, The Book of the Damned, folks, if you're out there and you're curious.
Well, and my last one I actually got from a review where somebody mentioned this is, and I've not seen this, but they said it's similar or sort of inspired by a Mila Jovovich thriller called The Fourth Kind.
The Fourth Kind?
Looking it up, it's a thriller involving an unsolved mystery in Alaska with extraordinary number of unexplained disappearances.
Okay. I could see that.
So
it's the snow instead of the ocean.
And just from the description, I could see that, they could probably say that's similar sort of thing. But, that's my...
Yeah. I mean, to sum it up, I mean, obviously, it was a little disjointed for you. I think it's great. I was really impressed that it was directed by two brothers that I've never heard of, and it just came out of the blue, and it's one of the few movies they've ever done. So that kind of impressed me. And then, of course, the cast as well, that their sister is the star, basically, even though she's secondary as far as characters.
And I would echo all that. I mean, I would not – I think if you – the hook is great. The ending is great. If you can get through a little bit of what I call a slog in the middle where it turns into more of a domestic family drama kind of thing, if you focus on the horror maybe, that would get you through that. But it's got great casting. It's got great acting. And overall, I mean, I would still recommend it. I think people should watch it. Have it.
Yeah, and it's always fun that we have a 2020 movie, you know, something that came out within the last few years. You know, we don't do that many of those on here. So that's kind of cool, too.
And that's what Tim and I think. We want to know what you think. So let us know down there. Did you like Block Island Sound? Did you not like Block Island Sound? Have you even heard of Block Island Sound? Let us know down there. Also do the things that they always say. Subscribe, ring the bell, do all that. If you're interested in us, you can go to the website and find out all of our past shows or go to the YouTube channel and see a lot of them there as well if you are a YouTube preference person. We also have a Patreon, as most people do, and we would really, really appreciate your support if you could have some extra cash there to help us out and become one of our subscribers. You get special stuff there. We have other podcasts that we do there. We do one called The Dilithium Chamber about classic Trek, and we also have X-Files Declassified, which is about the X-Files. And we're plotting through all of those seasons of those particular shows. And there's also special stuff there. We talk about theater. We talk about some other topics. Some
conventions. Other we did a conventions one at one time. All kinds of stuff that David and I have done over the last few decades together.
And we'd love to have you join our Patreon family. It would be awesome to have you there. You get special stuff, too. And if you have any movies you would like for us to put on our list, please let us know. Put them in the comments down below. Make sure you go to Apple if you can and give us a review. Apple gets a lot of widespread, and we get to reach more people if you give us some stars on there. And, Tim, I guess until next time, we might be looking to the future. A little bit.
Yes. Next week. We're going to go back, but it is a futuristic movie.
So, just like this one was with the alien Cthulhu monster.
The alien Cthulhu monster.
All right. See you next week.
All right. I'll be there.